Blog Talk Radio.
Today, definitely want to go back over the New Hampshire primaries last night. I only mentioned one of the winners because I didn't even want to mention the name of the Republican winner, but I, for full disclosure today, I will go ahead and do that because it's only the right thing to do because he must be defeated also, in my opinion. So let me get started there. And you know, it's Wednesday. I had a show on Monday. I thought I was going to be finished with the Super Bowl and everything that was dealt with it and all the ramifications, the news conference and Star Spangled Banner and the halftime show and Beyonce and what she was wearing. I'm going to have to go over that. And that's going to be a big part of the show right after I get finished with New Hampshire primaries, because I think it's just something that really needs to be discussed. I'm going to focus on what Beyonce wore, why she wore it. It was a 50th anniversary commemoration, and who were the Black Panthers, and what did they do, and why were they necessary, and what was done to them? So we're going to have to discuss that. And then hopefully, you know, maybe just a little bit of Cam, and then finally we can kind of move on out of that, and, you know, the sports half of my show can move from football on to other sports and start talking about Golden State and how they are the best team ever, and baseball is getting ready to start, and we can go from there. So let's go ahead and just start with New Hampshire primaries. We're going to start with the Democrats first. For Bernie Sanders won a landslide, essentially, 60%. Almost 60 to 40. You know, there was talk that maybe Secretary Clinton could bring it down under 10%. But it was not to be. And the thing is even though New Hampshire is a state with not a lot of diversity in their population, it's primarily a fairly white state, Bernie Sanders got votes from every sector, young, old, women. He beat Hillary Clinton and went with women. He got a nice percentage of what Black people there are in the state of New Hampshire. So it was an overall powerful performance by Senator Sanders. And now in about 10 days, there will be a primary in South Carolina. There will also be a caucus about the same time. They're not on the same day. They're separate. And for those of you that are Hillary Clinton supporters, I think what needs to be done right now is specifically for Hillary. It's personal. Just take a breath. It's only been two voting primary so far, one caucus, one primary. She won Iowa barely, and then just got blown out in this one. What I've noticed, and I found out something last night that would give one to pause about Secretary Clinton, and that is in the races that she's run. So U.S. Senator from New York, 2000, re-election in 2006, ran for president in 2008, and right now running for president in 2016. That's four different elections. I found out last night, and I don't know how many of you knew this, that she has never, whatever her poll number was at the beginning of the nomination fight, which whatever race she was in, she has never gained points. So if she started at 60% in 2000, she may have ended up winning by with 53%, 54%. In 2006, she started with about 67%. That's where she ended up. 2008, she started at the high point, and he just came down little by little against then-Senator Obama. And now, this year, she's come, you know, last year, 2015, she had a big lead against Bernie. She's been coming down. She has never, in any of her races, increased the lead. If it slipped a little bit, then it comes back up. You know, President Obama back in 2008 and even in 2012, you know, dropped a little bit, then he came back up in the polls. Secretary Clinton hasn't been able to do that in any of her races. And the one thing I've noticed for sure, I don't know if anybody else has noticed, is she's not the best campaigner. She certainly is not what her husband was in terms of just getting out there on the stump and even just her speaking voice. Sometimes it sounds like she's screaming. And this isn't about being sexist. It's just it's almost like she, in order to raise her voice, it's a scream. And she doesn't modulate. She doesn't go a little, you know, sometimes to emphasize a point. Sometimes you can lower your voice. And, you know, you get people to kind of lean in. They'll listen to you. She just seems to have like one speed. You know, and that she has to do. But beyond the theatrics, she also just, I listened to her speech last night. And, you know, after a while, it was just a laundry list of interest groups. You know, I want to do this for the gays, and I want to do this for the black people, and I want to do this for... It's like, wow, come on. We haven't gotten beyond that. What she has to do is she's got to start speaking to people's hopes. Because right now, I don't know if I'm not buying into the Trump, Sanders belief that this country is on the edge of a precipice, getting ready to fall off and go over the deep end. Are there things that need to be fixed? Yes. And I believe that there is... And are there structural changes that need to be made in some of our industries? Obviously, the banking, Wall Street industry, yes. Does Wall Street need to be torn down and never again built? No, I don't believe that. I believe the stock market has a place. But there are changes that need to be made. But I'm not one that believes that this country is going to hell in a handbasket and we've lost everything. And so... If Ms. Clinton is one that believes that we don't have to take the drastic measures, but we need to take some incremental measures and things need to change, Black Lives Matter, we certainly still have a lot to work to do in the justice system. Explain what it is she wants to see at the end. If she wants to work towards something, if she doesn't want to get to where Senator Sanders does in 2 seconds, because he wants to change things immediately, then give people an idea of what it is you see writ large, the big picture. You can't get there all at one time. You've made that point. But, I mean, last night she just did a laundry list of interest groups, and she sounded like a mini Bernie. So I don't think that's going to make it. The next two races are one's in Nevada. It's a caucus, so it's, again, one of those things where all the people kind of get together in a big room and then talk amongst themselves and then vote. And the other one is South Carolina, which is where – the rubber will meet the road. The thinking has been that because Iowa and New Hampshire were so non-diverse in terms of people of color, and that South Carolina will be more diverse. They have a high degree of African-American voters in South Carolina, that there would be they call it a firewall, that this is where Bernie Sanders would not be able to pass. And now he's been trying to work on having more of a diverse a group of people who will want to vote for him. He is gaining day by day. He was behind on Black Lives as just much as Mrs. Clinton was. They're both trying to get up to speed. The Clintons, obviously, with her husband, the former president, has had a good relationship for the most part with getting African-American voters. There have been issues, and people are critical of Secretary Clinton because, as the wife, There's the belief that Bill Clinton did some things a little too much in the 1990s, the crime bill, and it started the whole idea of the prison industrial complex of just putting people in jail just to put people in jail. So there are some things that need to be worked on. But listen, I lived at that time, and I didn't do anything to stop it, so I can't sit here and make it like, you know, I'm purer than the driven snow. Were there drug issues in the country? Absolutely. There was a disparity between crack cocaine and powder cocaine that's trying to be fixed now. But for the most part, people were just getting thrown in jail for minor drug offenses, too many people of color. And with this whole prison complex now that is a for-profit business, prisons aren't now part of the state governments, or not as many as the federal governments. They're now for profit. You have to keep the prisons full in order to make a profit. So that does have to change. Clinton just has to take a deep breath and understand that she's in a long race. This is just the start, and that she can do some things. She has a lot of positives in her pocketbook, so to speak. She's holding a lot of things that are positives for her over Senator Sanders, but she just has to relax. You know, modulate the voice. Don't sound like you're screaming to the masses, even though you are. Kind of adjust the voice a little bit and speak to people's hopes. I just give a huge laundry list, and I think she'll be okay. But Bernie Sanders is going to make this a race, and she's in a competition now. It's like, you know, you're in a sports competition, and you thought it was going to be an easy win. All of a sudden, you find out you're really going to be in a struggle. So she's in a struggle now, and we'll see how that comes out. Nothing wrong with a little competition. In terms of the Republicans, Donald Trump did win the New Hampshire primary, and he won it by about what people thought he would win about. He was in the mid-30s. John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, was second. And then there was a group there with Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush, and Marco Rubio came in fifth because of his poor showing on that debate Saturday night when he had to keep repeating the same thing over and over. And he turned into flop sweat. He was embarrassed. Donald Trump is in this race for real. And what is going to be the determination if you are a Donald Trump supporter? He's getting ready to go into some of the prime territory where he could continue winning races. If you are not a Donald Trump supporter, but you do vote in the Republican primaries, you're going to have to find out. You have this group there with Kasich, Cruz, Bush, Rubio. Somebody has to come out of that. They eventually, in the next month or so, by the end of March or mid-March, they're going to need to figure out who is going to be the person, the one person that goes up against him. There may be two, maybe two people. Maybe it's going to be Trump, Cruz, and one of the others, Rubio or Bush. So you have the two Florida citizens banging up against each other, the former governor and the now senator. But they're going to have to separate this, because I think one of the weaknesses of Trump is that no one has been able to specifically go at him. They've all been kind of attacking each other. They've been a little leery of attacking Trump because they feel like he's going to start going at them. Go at the man. The man has not given out any specifics. He keeps talking in generalities. I saw him yesterday, and this whole building a wall in Mexico is about ready to fall apart because he can't really give a price on it or who's going to build it, who literally is going to build it. So his whole ideas of just throwing out words and with nothing much behind them is eventually going to fall, unless he has some specifics that he can use to make his claim that he's going to not allow Muslims into the country and he's going to build a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. It's idiotic. Like I said, he hasn't proven anything, but we'll see what happens. Governor Kasich from Ohio came out of nowhere in New Hampshire, worked hard, won the race. He is a conservative, very anti-choice in terms of women's right to choose. We would call him a moderate only in this particular race with Trump and Cruz in the race at the top of the field. But Governor Kasich is pretty conservative. So if that's your cup of tea, that's great. For me, he's almost the least objectionable of the group of five. He's the least objectionable. But that's not really saying a lot. So, and now you have Jeb Bush, who had been not doing well. He made a little better showing yesterday, and he's got South Carolina coming up, and that's their next primary. The Democratic and Republican South Carolina primaries are on different days. So last night they both had the New Hampshire primary, but when South Carolina comes around in the next week, they're going to be on different days. So Jeb Bush's strong state is South Carolina, and maybe he'll start attacking Donald Trump, and maybe Donald Trump will start telling people how Jeb Bush is weak and he's quiet and where's his mommy and all that kind of stuff that's been going on for the last week. But we'll see how that goes. That's going to be a very interesting race, and we'll see if there is anyone that can step up to the two leaders. I think right now the big picture in both parties is that you have two top dogs, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. There's just no doubt about it. They're the top dogs. Who can bring them down? In the Republicans primary, you have two or three people, but they're going to have to eventually get it whittled down to one person, mano a mano, because five or six people in that primary, and I think today Chris Christie is gone, good riddance, and I believe Carly Fiorina, as of right before I started, there was nothing that came down on the wire service that said she was out, but Governor Christie has stopped his campaign. So as long as Donald Trump has three or four people to go up against him, they can't get to him. Eventually, they have to get that one whittled down to where it's one-on-one, and then you can start. Because I don't think Donald Trump yet has proven, well, he obviously has not proven, that he can get 50%. So the most I think he can get from anyone else is if Ted Cruz were to leave. That's the other conservative that those voters may go to Donald Trump. But I don't think a lot of Jeb Bush's supporters will go to Donald Trump. And by the way, that said George Bush, the former president will probably be in South Carolina helping his brother. So we'll finally see the former president stump for his brother in South Carolina. So we'll see him in the next week. And Marco Rubio's supporters will probably go to Jeb Bush or Kasich. You know, it's Kasich, Bush, and Rubio. Those three, that group of votes versus Trump, Cruz, and that circle of votes, and who's going to come out of it. So that's kind of where I see that one. And then the Democratic race. I mean, we only have two people. I think after South Carolina and in Nevada. So in the next 2 weeks, if Secretary Clinton does not show a strength. And by that, I mean winning one of those races. She really needs to win South Carolina. If she were to lose South Carolina, even if she won Nevada, which I can't see, the one she really needs to win is South Carolina. If she doesn't, expect to hear Joe Biden's name pop back up again. Expect to hear it. The vice president, he said no back in October. But expect to hear his name come up. Or Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, is also talking about coming into the race. I think all he would do would be to spoil the race for a Republican. So I'm not sure why he's coming in. I don't think he can literally win it himself. And I think he would only hurt the Democrats. He is gun control and it's woman's right to choose. So I don't see where he would help do anything but select a Republican. Not sure what Joe Biden would be a different animal. So we'll see how that goes. Postscript from the Super Bowl. My goodness. The game was Sunday. Wasn't it 3 days ago? And it just continues. It continues. It continues. Let me just get Mr. Cam Newton out of the way. I think he has come out yesterday and made it wasn't a mea culpa. He explained himself why he felt the way he did. I think one of the things after the game, after you're seeing him get up and walk away from the interview, and I didn't like it. I thought he should have just hung in there and stayed at it. And even if he was going to be one word answers and pouting, at least you know, I appreciate being a sore loser. What I didn't know that night, though, that came out the next day was that they had opposing players in that same room or in that same area doing interviews. So Cam Newton on the Panthers lost the game to the Denver Broncos. There was a Denver Bronco defensive player probably 20, 30 feet because you could hear him when they showed you a different angle and then I had a microphone that was listening. You could literally hear the player talking about how this is how we stopped them. We put a lot of people inside the box close to the line of scrimmage and did man-on-man on the outside, and that's how we got them. And he was discussing that as Cam Newton was trying to explain what happened in the game. I would have probably been a little pissed, too. You know, the one thing we do with fighters, you know how pre-fight they put them up together face-to-face, nose-to-nose, and sometimes it gets into a crazy thing where they start fighting. And then post-fight, sometimes they have them on the same dais, and they'll do their post-fight interview. And then that every once in a while has gotten into a little kerfuffle. They need to separate. They've done it before in sporting championship games where one team has their press separate from the other team, or two or three guys from one team will go up at the same time. They're done. They leave. The other team can come up. But having them right there in the same room, I think I can just see the things that could happen. Fortunately, nothing did happen. But Cam explained himself, and I'm okay with that. Then it was this thing that I didn't even know about until yesterday about his stance during the Star Spangled Banner. And the fact is, he was standing next to his coach had his hand over his heart. And Cam was kind of holding his shoulder pads in the front. Okay, and he was just standing there. And oh my goodness, you get these over patriotic, and there you can be over patriotic sometimes. I'm firmly of the belief you can go overboard. Oh, why didn't he have his hand over his heart? Oh, it's only 60 seconds. Why couldn't he do that? Just disagreement to be disagreeable. I don't like Cam Newton, so now let's find other things that he did that I don't like about him. You know, he's a big mouth. He's a showboat. He's a hot dog. He wrote MVP on his shoe. Who does he think he is? He always is dancing around on the – I'm glad they stuffed him. You know, he walked away from the press conference. He's a dumb – I heard all kinds of names. You know, there was a former football player who tweeted that he was a boy. Got that. And now this whole thing with the Star Spangled Banner. As someone who used to play, I don't remember ever, hardly ever putting my hand over my heart. That, and to be honest with you, patriotism wasn't the first thing I was thinking about before the game. That 2 minutes during that Star Spangled Banner, it wasn't what I was thinking about. I was thinking about how am I going to protect myself out on this field, that the next play could literally be my last. Therefore, I needed to have my head on a swivel, and I'm going to try to knock somebody's head off. That's the frenzy that I was getting into during the 2 minutes of the Star Spangled. So, I don't hardly remember singing it ever. I listened to it. I knew when the end of the song was coming, and when that end of the song was coming, I usually let out a large yell because now I'm ready to do something, football-wise. I was ready to hurt somebody. I mean, it's, you know, that's the mentality that you're in. I don't know what mentality he gets in. A quarterback doesn't have to do that same anger thing because I was on the line where, you know, you're constantly crashing into each other. So quarterback's a little bit more cool, calm, but you're in a mindset of what it is that you're getting ready to do. To complain about their stance, you know, unless somebody is sitting on the bench or, you know, doing something with the trainer and not even listening to this, I believe you should be able to stay. And this is practiced in the preseason of most teams, pro, college, little league. Guys, let's do our stand when the Star Spangled Banner starts. I mean, it's practiced. So you kind of know what it is you're supposed to be doing. And the idea is to be able to, you know, stand still. let's not get into things where we have criticize him. Fine, you want to criticize him for not doing what you thought he should have been done at the Star Spangled Banner. Fine. Well, now let's go along the line of the Denver Broncos. You know, I'm sure not everyone there was in perfect military arrangement. Bunch of hooey. But what I really wanted to talk about today, and what I think needs to be at least cleared up on my end to anyone that wants to listen to this show, is about what it is, the whole kerfluffle about Beyonce and her outfit and Black Panthers. And I'm not watching the halftime show because she's anti-police. Let's unpack this because we need to discuss this. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Black Panthers. And people talk about the Black Panthers movement. It is known for the most part in the United States of America, most people, primarily white people, as a terror group. I want to disavow you of that notion. They were not a terror group. Let me tell you how the Black Panthers started in the mid-60s, principally 1966. This is the 50th anniversary. They started as a group in the state of Alabama, in the South, attempting to get Black people on the ballot when white people would not let Black people on the ballot. That's how they started. That was a Black Panther Party. So it was literally a party, a political party, that was trying to get Black people on the ballot when whites were not allowing Black people, illegally not allowing people to be on the ballot. This is why we had things like Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights that started the year before. It was signed by President Johnson. They expanded from that to become a movement around the country, principally well-known in California, in Oakland. They were in 68 cities. Let me explain some of the things that the Black Panther Party did, what they were doing. They were against what they saw as increasing police brutality. Now, we know that this has been an issue in the last 3 or 4 years in our country, as we now have cell phones and videos that we can see this happen, and dash cams in the police cars. But this has been an issue for a long time. Okay, it moved from lynchings, extrajudicial lynchings, where people... vigilantes took it upon themselves to kill people. They thought they committed a crime. Most of us know about what happened with Emmett Till. Allegedly, he whistled at some woman. People did what they did to him, murdered him, and maimed him. So there was an issue with police brutality, killing of Black citizens in the country in the 60s. Black Panther Party got literally started walking around their own neighborhoods to make sure that there was no crime in the neighborhood. They were against crime in their own neighborhoods. They wanted crime to stop. They were against black-on-black crime, for lack of a better phrase. They set up food programs for the children, preschool meals for children in school. They had health clinics in the community, because they were trying to help their own community. This is what the Black Panther Party was about. Against police brutality, against the ravage of drugs and black-on-black crime in their neighborhood, for education, setting up meals for children, helping families in the neighborhood. Now, because they had the temerity to also carry guns, which I believe we had the Second Amendment in the 1960s, this scared the government, and principally the FBI, led by J. Edgar Hoover, who decided that after just 1967, Black Panther Party is starting to get movement, they're starting to grow around the country. He decided that we have to put this group down. They're a terror organization because they're against police brutality. And what J. Edgar Hoover did was he started a program called COINTELPRO. COINTELPRO. counterintelligence program. And what he did, and it's in the records, is he introduced people into the program, into the Black Panther Party, that were there to divide them. He had press write stories that were anti-Black Panthers. In California, the governor of California, a man by the name of Ronald Reagan, made a law, think about this, made a law that people could no longer carry guns out on the streets. Ronald Reagan was gun control when it was Black folk. And that's one of the things that we've been talking about the last few years, as this carry, you know, conceal and carry laws have been growing all around this country. We see mainly white people conceal and carry. Okay, the law is there. You're allowed to do it. But when it's Black people that do it, too often there have been deaths just from being able to carry. I spoke this morning about a gentleman 2 years ago, 2014, in an Ohio Kmart, picked up a toy gun. Somebody saw him, said, oh my goodness, got on the cell phone, calling the police. There's a guy in here with a gun. I don't know what he's going to do, but please get in here before he starts shooting. Ohio is a carry and conceal and carry state. You are allowed to carry a gun. But because it was a Black person that had the gun, all of a sudden he was ready to shoot him out. And he was killed on the spot as the police arrived because he had a toy gun in his hand. Wasn't pointing at anyone. He's looking at it, examining it. It's on video. Look for yourself. So the Black Panthers were restricted in California from carrying guns, and they were infiltrated to defeat them, all because they wanted to better their neighborhood. This was not an organization out to commit crime. They were defending their own people who were being brutalized by the police, like we see now, and trying to help their communities, which were ghettos. Now, let's take a step back from these communities in the North that were wastelands, nothing left in them. Let's take a step back 20 years. Let's go back to World War II. World War II. Black folks tried to get into the U.S. Army, allowed in the U.S. Army, but segregated. During the war, POWs from the Germans and the Italians were treated better than the actual Black soldiers who wanted to help their own country. The war ends. We free Europe. Black people come back to the United States, veterans of the war, and are treated as second-class citizens. So we can free the Europeans, fight for their freedom, but then treat our fellow Americans as second-class citizens. During the war, there was a large, and it has been an ongoing migration since the early 1900s, but there was a large migration of Black people moving from the South into the North. You remember now, during the war, there were a lot of factories built for making bombs and munitions and ships and trains and all different things that were needed for the war effort. Needed jobs. Jobs were built. So jobs in the Midwest, Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, jobs on the East Coast. And there's a wonderful book. It is one of the best books I've ever read in my life, The Warmth of Other Suns, S-U-N-S, The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson. And it talks about the migration of Black people from the South to the North. And it's interesting because certain states in the South, people migrated to certain cities in the North. So you have Mississippi, people from Mississippi who moved into the Midwest. You have people from Louisiana who primarily moved out west to Texas and then California. You have people in North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, who moved up the East Coast. It's interesting how the migration patterns moved. And it's really true to this day. In Southern California, there are a large amount of people from Louisiana. It's always been, I never understood that until I read this book. It's a great book. It gives you a lot of history. So all these people are moving now to the north. Post-World War II, the veterans come home, the white veterans come home, and those cities that they used to live in, and now there are black people there too, this is when white flight started. Moving to the suburbs. Get out of here. Leave this to them. We were getting away from them. Didn't allow black people to move. They redlined. Kept them out of those suburbs if they wanted to move. GI Bill really restricted for a lot of black folks. Because even if you got the GI Bill, what school could you go to if they weren't allowing you to go to school? What if you got a loan to from a bank, if you got a loan to go from the bank, what area were you going to be able to move into? Well, they redlined you so that you could only move into certain neighborhoods. And then those certain neighborhoods, they kept restricted from other business. Now you have ghettos. So this is what the Black Panthers come into in the 60s. And then obviously, again, you have the police brutality and all the ugliness of that against a group that is trying to help their own. Trying to help in having health clinics so that people can stay healthy because there's no doctors or many hospitals around. Food, because the grocery stores are not as plentiful as they are in other areas of town. Trying to police their own communities, because certainly whatever police you have in the communities are only trying to hurt you for the most part. And the policemen now don't live in the neighborhoods they used to live in when they were more white communities, because now they've moved away, white flight. So the police that you do have aren't of you, aren't of your neighborhood. They don't care. So eventually the Black Panthers, through the COINTELPRO program by the FBI, got torn down. And the stigma that has been left on the Black Panthers is that of they were a terrorist group, because all these black people together having guns. Well, we can't have that. How can we have black have guns? I am of the opinion that if more black people started doing conceal and carry and carrying around guns and walking in the stores with the gun on their hip, I think we would have a lot more gun control in this country. All of a sudden, there would be a change about gun control, because the NRA had nothing to say when Ronald Reagan made that law in the 60s about restricting gun carry. And it was primarily a law built for the Black Panthers. They had nothing to say about it. So this is the history that I know of the Black Panthers. And this is the history that Beyonce, in her one-piece leather outfit and the boots, was portraying and commemorating. There are too many people in this country who want to say that was a negative, and how dare she. And Black Panthers, it sounds, it's been given even a sound connotation. You say it's the Black Panthers, some people, those dangerous people. No. Only dangerous in the fact that they wanted to help their own and were not allowed to, because that was seen as a danger to help their own. I feel strongly about this. Again, you can check it for yourself. If you think that these people were out there trying to terrorize the communities that they lived in, you have another thing coming. And go look at the program that the FBI set up in order to infiltrate them and destroy them. That is what Beyonce was commemorating with her outfit on Sundays, on this past Sunday at the Super Bowl. And also, I wanted to talk just a little bit about, in keeping with this whole Super Bowl thing, of why too often our sports are used as a proxy for our politics. So here we had this game Sunday. We had Denver with Peyton Manning and Cam Newton with the Carolina Panthers. And you can literally see one side is going to be the Republican side and one side is going to be the Democratic side. With Peyton Manning, and this is a quarterback that I've always liked, I've been a fan of Peyton since even college. He moves to Denver. He gets traded to Denver about 2 years ago, or he gets signed by Denver, free agent, about 2 or 3 years ago. And he connects with the owner of the Papa John's Pizza. Papa John's Pizza, I've had it once. It was okay. Nothing great. Not my favorite. I'm still St. Louis Emo's guy. But Papa John's the actual owner of the company is known as someone who was very much against the Obamacare, the ACA Act, and came out against it over the last 2 or 3 years, saying, you know, if we have to start giving health care to our employees, I'm going to have to start raising our prices. I'm going to have to start cutting employees. Well, look at what has happened to his company. It just came out yesterday that one of the franchisors of Papa John's is having to pay back $800,000 because they shorted the employees on their wages, didn't pay them for overtime, clocked them out earlier than what they actually did. You know, you can nickel and dime people. You know, after a while, you know, 50 cents here, 35 cents here, $1.25 here, $8 here, $2 here. It's almost kind of, you can't see it in your paycheck, and then all of a sudden, it adds up. Now, this was a franchisee on the East Coast, but it is also being used as to find out if someone actually, if the parent company had a part in this. So Papa John's, the parent company, may also be sanctioned, as is the franchisee. But we use our politics, or we use our sports as a proxy for our politics. So, you know, we have the people line up for Peyton, and we have the people line up for Cam and against Cam, more importantly. You know, he'd come out, I'm an African-American, this, that, and the other. So I knew what was going to happen 2 weeks before. Once you knew who was going to play, and it's happened a lot in our sports, you know, when you see who's playing against who, you can almost see how it's going to line up and who's going to be picking who. And sometimes it just gets a little bit too much. I wish people would just take a deep breath. I think I have someone online, possibly. Hello? Are you
there? Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, can you hear me? Pretty good.
I can hear you. I can hear you loud and clear.
Well, I just called to listen in, but I am curious. Are you for the Obamacare Act?
Am I for the Obamacare Act? I think health care should be more affordable for more people. Yes, absolutely. Yes. For lack of a better word, yes, I am.
Okay. I could say I'm definitely opposing that idea. And the reason why I say that is, with these companies, it you got to see, okay, what are they doing when you can't afford the health care? Well, you got a $700 fine, correct, at the end of the year when you file your taxes. They charge these people $700, okay, which is more tax. Well, where is that tax going? Number two, you got to
where is it
that
going?
Pretty
wait
much
a minute, goes, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Where is it going? You asked the
that
question.
$700?
Yes.
Well, I honestly, I do not know where that $700 is going. They just raised the business taxes up. The government's now raising up the living property tax. I live down south. This year, you're seeing the property tax go up. Now, you know, and same thing with the race war and that they got going on right now. And the reason why I brought that up is because you're seeing more of a race controversy on TV nowadays than we probably have ever seen in a very long time.
Okay.
And the reason why I bring that up is because right now it almost seems like the government is doing this little money game right now. And the reason why I say that is because you're seeing property taxes go up. Okay. You're seeing just taxes in general go up. You're not seeing the deficit go down by any means. You're not seeing any changes in the deficit. You're really not seeing a big difference in the economy. When Obama Obamacare Act.
Hold on just a second.
Go ahead.
Are you saying you have not seen any changes in the economy since 2009? Is that your belief?
For me, no, I haven't. They have raised the minimum wage. But when you do that, it fluctuates the living cost. Okay. Now, when Obama created the Obamacare Act, what did you see with the prices of health care? They went up dramatically.
They have not gone up. That's not true. They have not gone up dramatically. They have not gone up dramatically. If anything, they have moderated. They may have gone up slightly, but they have not gone up dramatically. That is not true. And so, but here's my question, because I still want to have about 15 minutes left. Do you believe in universal health care or no?
I do to a certain extent.
Well, here, okay, so here's my question. If you, well, a certain extent, I don't know what that means. If you believe in it, do you believe that there is going to be a cost in it, or is it going to just be free? No cost anywhere.
We would have to see how other countries do it, to be quite honest.
Well,
they
usually
have universal health care in other countries, but you got to see that the wages for doctors and stuff are fluctuated differently than they are here.
That's my point. So there is going to be a cost. If people because this is my point, I thank you for calling, but this is my point. If we believe in universal health care, if people believe in it, first of all, if you don't believe in it, fine. Say no, and then everyone's on their own. People have to go to the emergency room and get health care. But here's the thing. If we only want people to go to the emergency room, then we're going to have more sickness in this country. If we want to have universal health care, in order to do that, doctors have to see people on a yearly basis like physicals. And that is going to change our health care model because people won't get as sick long term. Do you kind of get where I'm going?
Oh, I totally agree. I just think the way they're doing it right now, they're going the wrong way.
Well, no, I just wanted to say, and I'll let you finish. What I'm saying is, my point is, if we really truly want universal health care in this country, we're going to have to come to the grips that we will have a healthier country. And do we really want that, or do we really want to see more people sick? Because that's more money in the doctor's pockets and the insurance companies.
Yeah, it should. Well, you also got to see these doctors. I mean, they're not stupid. These people who run the insurance back there. Now, let's say like I'm on Blue Cross Blue Shield, okay? And I have a broken leg. I go there with my insurance. Now, you see someone on there with a government health plan. They'll go there, and the prices are changed too. If you notice, my broken leg is going to be more cheaper compared to what they do with someone who has the government funded health care. So they have
sure,
to focus on that too. They have to focus on that too.
Absolutely, I agree. They're going to get the bigger bill than the person. I understand that totally. And now let me just go back to something else you said. And I'm sorry. What's your name?
My name is Justin.
Justin, hi Justin. Thank you for calling. You spoke about there's a lot of things that in regard to race and race is being brought up. I will bring it up on this show from time to time, but I can tell you that I'm not interested in saying that someone is racist, but I do want to explain, as I see it, things that have happened in this country that sometimes we have not talked about. Sometimes we just literally have not talked about things before that people are uncomfortable talking, because when you bring up the word race, then it gets, I don't want to talk about it. I'm not uncomfortable talking about it. I have a lot of friends who happen to be white. I grew up with a lot of people who happen to be white. And sometimes we can talk about these things without getting angry. Because I don't like it to know, it doesn't necessarily have to be angry. It just has to be, this is what happened. So I understand what you're saying, but sometimes I believe it's important to talk about.
Yeah, and I am white. And I live down south, and there's a lot more blacks in this community than there are whites. Now, there is racism in this country, okay? There's always going to be racism in this country. Some people, I'm not racist. I know a lot of people are not racist, but people's mindset are just programmed in that way. There is racism. But the reason why I'm bringing up the whole race war right now is because the media is feeding it to the people like crazy recently. Okay. It gets a lot of views. They're hoping it gets a lot of votes, for the, upcoming election. To be honest, the main reason you're seeing this is because I honestly believe this, and this is, everybody has their own opinion, but they're bringing this in to try to have more control over people. They're trying to feed this to America to show the problems in the country. You see them trying to ban guns. Now they're enforcing the Health Care Act, and the reason is because now they're trying to turn it almost into... I hate to say this because, I don't believe it's going to go that far as a communist country. I do not believe it is going to get that far. But what I'm saying is they're using the race war, the whole Obamacare Act, and they're starting to tie this in to try to have more control over what people do in their lives. And that's just a fact. That's why they're trying to ban the gun laws. That's why they're showing more racism on TV nowadays, because it gets views and it gets people's idea on things running in their mind, thinking that that this country is starting to be unsafe and we need more people to come in and control it.
Well, let me ask you this question, Justin. Do you believe that some of the issues that have been brought up about race and skin color are being brought up because our president is named Barack Obama?
Barack Obama, I hate to say, he's just a face. He doesn't run this country.
Oh, okay.
Most people know that. I'm looking at the bigger picture.
Let me ask you this.
I don't think they're bringing it up because Obama.
Are you saying that about presidents?
For a bigger cause.
Justin, are you saying that about presidents? Are you saying that about presidents in general, or just because of this particular president that he doesn't run the country?
Did George Bush? It's well known. All presidents don't run the country. It's all ran through state senate offices.
Okay, that's fair. As long as you're consistent with that, I'm good with that. That's fine.
I mean, that's just a fact. No president really runs this country. They're really just kind of pawns, in my view. And that's what I was going to bring up with Obama. He's really just a pawn in this whole. They're really using the racism to get what they want. You know, more gun control, more control over people. Because to be honest with you, I've seen it throughout the years. Right now, I've seen more people involved with this coming up election and the laws nowadays than I've ever seen in the past. And it's because the people are actually starting to wake up and realize what's going on in this country.
Justin, let me tell you this. During this president's 7 years in office, there has been less gun control. So the whole thing about gun control, are there people that want it? Sure there are. But there's no laws on the books that I've seen anywhere. But people keep saying it. And now I'm going to turn that back on you, that people stir up things in order to keep the Second Amendment as a right. So I understand that it's a right. And I was just speaking about how when certain people have guns and conceal and carry, that they don't like that right. So you have the Second Amendment. That's not going anywhere. You know, having certain restrictions on the type of gun a person buys is a good thing. But no one's going to restrict someone from buying a gun, per se.
Right.
Thank you for calling. Thanks for calling, Justin. I'm almost at the end of my show, so I just wanted to tie it up. But I really appreciate you calling. I hope you can call again. And I understand where you're coming from because your point of view is a point of view that's out there. It is absolutely out there. I didn't get a chance to ask you what politician that you were in. I would assume, based on the things that you said, that you were probably a Republican. I don't know if you're interested in the voting process this year or not. I hope so. And I really appreciate you calling in because you're the type of person that may not agree with me, but that I want to listen because sometimes we just have to have an exchange. And sometimes I need to hear where you're coming from. And sometimes I need to let you know where I'm coming from and I need to hear your point of view. So thanks for calling in again. I think I was finishing up on just pretty much Peyton and Cam and just how our sports are sometimes used as a proxy for our politics. And that's where now with social media, you just see it, you know, Cam's standing on the sidelines. He didn't have his hand over his heart and Beyonce. And if they catch her in a right picture frame pose, then she's looking ugly and, and there was a whole thing. Beyonce was dancing, I guess, at the Super Bowl. They took a photo of her. And it was a photo where you can just catch someone in mid-dance. And she had a kind of a stern look on her face. Wasn't one of the more attractive photos of her. They made up this story that she's trying to get all these pictures taken off the internet because it's not an attractive picture. So you have people putting that picture out there. And it's just a silliness. It's crazy. So let's hopefully we put that to it's no longer a part of the conversation. I don't want to put the Super Bowl away. Hopefully, I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the program, I do have a little surprise that's coming up on Monday. So it may come back up again, but just because that surprise is going to be needed. I'm going to move. We're just going to do a 180. And now that football's over, now it's time for baseball. And I want to talk about my team, who happens to be the St. Louis Cardinals. And what are their chances for this next year? There is a new champion in the National League Central, and it is the team called the Chicago Cubs. They did not win the Central last year, but they certainly beat the Cardinals in the playoffs. And along with the Pittsburgh Pirates, there's going to be a very, very strong competition for the NL Central. Now, last year, the NL Central was the strongest division in all of baseball. You only had three teams make the playoffs: Cardinals, Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Chicago Cubs. The Cardinals lost two players, two primary players, the pitcher, a pitcher and an outfielder, to the Chicago Cubs. And Jason Hayward, and why am I forgetting the name of the pitcher? I cannot believe this. I'm embarrassed. I should know better. The pitcher who came from Boston, who is now on the Cubs. So, are the Cardinals going to be able to continue at the top of the NL Central? And previous to last season, I was really high on them because I really thought that that team had the pitching to win everything, World Series, go all the way. What happened to them, in my opinion, during the season, as the season went on, especially the second half of the season, is the defense started to get a little shaky. Primarily second baseman, Colton Wong, and I was a little concerned coming into the playoffs. Then we had the pitchers break down. C-Mart broke down. Lance Lynn was hurting the second half of the season. Obviously, Wainwright had the Achilles. He made a tremendous comeback at the end of the season. They had the best pitching in the National League up until probably the last two or three weeks of the season, and that led into the playoffs, and the pitching eventually sprung a leak. The defense sprung a leak, which for me, defense first. You have to have great defense in order to win in baseball, in my opinion. The pitching, you have to have. Obviously, you have to have hitting, but if you can't field the ball, get the outs, three outs an inning, not four outs, because the guy would have made the catch, but he dropped it, or he fielded the ground ball and he overthrew first base, or it was a ground ball right to him and it was going to be a double play, and he threw it to the second baseman for one out, but they didn't get the second one because the ball was thrown away and a run scored. Those are the little things over the course of a season that can kill you. So the Cardinals, I thought, lost a little bit of steam. I know people that were just so intent on them winning 100 games, and my consideration had nothing to do with winning 100 games, but it was more how do they look. You know, a 94-win team can look better going into the playoffs than a 102-win team. I think the Kansas City Royals proved that. They did not win 100 games last year. Neither did the New York Mets. The Mets came on at the end, the second half of the season, with a few trades and got hot the second half of the season. It's not the wins during the season. It's how you're going to play going into the play, getting to the playoffs. Obviously, you need enough wins to get to the playoffs. But then from there, you have to be ready in the playoffs. And you have to start those 11 games at three-game series, then the four-game series for the National League division, and then obviously the championship, and then the World Series. So it's with 15 games. Is it 15 games now? NLCS, NLDS, World Series, 12, and if you have a wild card. So it's those 12 games that matter. I'm looking forward to them. The thing with the Cardinals that's going to be a challenge is they have to have perfect health, almost perfect health. You know, Piscotty has got to stay healthy. Randall Grichuk has to stay healthy. Colton Wong, Matt Holliday can't go down for 40 games. Yachty has to be able to play 120, 130 games, but they need a good backup. It's going to take a lot. I'll get into it a little bit more on Friday, and then on Friday I will let you know about the surprise that's coming on Monday. But thanks for listening. Thanks for the call that I got. And keep listening, because I'm going to have things that I'm sure I'm going to disagree with people about, but I'll give you a reason why. Have a great day.
away.